Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ayo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show, presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get 2 risk free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. We are here to recap the Dodgers White Sox series. The Dodgers take 2 of 3 from the Chicago White Sox on the south side. The White Sox lose this game 11-9. They got a great performance from Dylan Cease, and that was about 7 hours ago, and we're still here. Just starting now. The pregame show started at 12:30, and right at 5:30 sharp, we're starting the postgame show. A lot to talk about on this one. I'm Sean Anderson, the host of the CHGO White Sox postgame show. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. Later in the show, we'll be joined by Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer from Guaranteed Rate Field. But today we got special guest Jared Willis joining us. He's the CHGO White Sox baseball beat writer. He'll write for the Cubs. He'll write for the White Sox. A very talented writer. You can follow him on Twitter at Jay Willis. And instead of eyes, it is wise, folks.
That's right.
Remember that. And in the middle, got Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. So a lot to talk about in this one. Herb, usually we start off with the starting pitcher.
Yeah.
We're going to bypass all of that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it was a 7-5 game, if you missed it. And Trey Turner's up. Freddie Freeman just got in, cleared the bases it was a single, I think, right? That was
double.
After
he,
double. It was then he advanced on the wild pitch.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I'm mixing up at bats.
Again,
this game was very, very long.
Ago.
So Freddie Freeman gets on first base. There's a wild pitch. He advances to second. Trey Turner's up. It's a 1-2 count. There's two outs. Again, it's a 7-5 ball game. And Tony La Russa makes the decision to intentionally walk Trey Turner again in a 1-2 count with two outs, bringing up Max Muncy. And then Max Muncy would later then hit a home run, making it 10-5. The White Sox end up losing by 2. Let's just relive that moment. What did you guys think when he intentionally walked Trey Turner? Obviously, it had a bad outcome because then Max Muncy follows it up with a home run and calling him a bitch after he crosses home plate. What are our thoughts? How are we breaking this one down? Jared, we'll start with you.
I mean, if I really said what I was thinking, I'm afraid this video would get flagged. So I can't even fully comprehend the decision-making there for a lot of different reasons. I mean, number one, to issue an intentional walk when you're ahead in the count like that does not make sense in really any context. I saw on Twitter a little while ago that has not happened since 2016. And walking someone while you're ahead in the count with two strikes hasn't happened since 2013.
Damn.
So, you know, just a truly mind-boggling decision. And so there's that, but then also if you look at the numbers, Max Muncy's numbers against left-handed pitching, it just, there's no world where this makes sense. I look, maybe if just for the pure schadenfreude, I look forward to Tony La Russa's explanation for why he decided to do this, because obviously he's going to get asked. I think if I were in there, I think that that might be the very first question. I'm sure, you know, Vinny and the other beat writers that are there, that's the first thing they're going to ask him about, because it's just, it's baffling.
baffling is the correct word, because you mentioned his splits, Max Muncy versus left-handers. In his career, 597 plate appearances versus left-handed hitters. He has an OPS of 857, and versus right-handed hitters, he has 1,726 plate appearances, an OPS of 132. He is about a 0.2 or 0.2 percent better hitter against left-handers in his career. In the only world that that makes sense, walking Trey Turner in a 1-2 count to get to the left-hander, to have Bennett Souza, a left-hander, versus Max Muncy, a left-hander, it only makes sense in the White Sox world. It only makes sense in Tony La Russa's world. This is the same guy where yesterday I'm blowing a gasket on the way he sets up his lineup, going left, right, alternating the bullshit back and forth in just such an old school way. I don't know if he realizes that they took out that whole loogie rule, right? They can't go into a pitcher. They have to face three guys, all right? So you have the ability at least to change that, your lineup. You have the ability to pinch hit and go to a different platoon if you need to, but the only place it makes sense is the White Sox. They are just beholden to having Gavin Sheets in the lineup day in and day out and giving him one more plate appearance than Andrew Vaughn throughout the season because he's just a left-handed hitter. The reason Bennett Souza's still on this team is because he's a left-handed pitcher. They are beholden still to the lefty and righty nature of this all Herb, and that's why they are years behind every other baseball team in Major League Baseball.
And just to highlight this, Joe Sheehan, who has a newsletter, baseball guy, tweeted this out. I feel silly even breaking it down, but Trey Turner career versus left-handed pitchers after a 1-2 count, 258, 310, 390. Bennett Sousa's career versus left or right-handed batter after a 1-2 count, 167, 286, 167. T.R. Larry traded that for Max Muncy career versus left-handed pitcher, as you said, 251, 365, 492. Sousa career versus left-handed pitchers or hitters, 300, 389, 6 or 367. So he traded in a worse hitter for a better hitter and a guy who hits lefties harder than he hits righties. Just because Tony's stuck in the lefty-righty type of bullshit, this guy has to go. I'm not into firing him and the team just explodes. That's not what I'm here for. He is actively, and I am a guy who has been saying for years that managers don't matter that much in wins and losses. That shit is over. He destroyed my belief. Good job, Tony. You have destroyed it because you are actively trying to sabotage the White Sox in their championship window. I mean, let's look at the game. He didn't take Cease out in the fifth inning when we all clearly saw that Dylan Cease was struggling to get out of that inning and just let him throw extra pitches. And the Dodgers broadcast again broke bad on him and said, why is a guy who's struggling like this throwing 40-plus pitches in this inning? He was over 100 pitches in that game. He's already pitched 100 pitches. You see him struggling. He just came off an outing where he walked seven guys. So why are you leaving him in the game? He put in Bennett Sousa in a one-run game in the sixth inning. He has Aaron Bummer available to him. Aaron Bummer, while you might think he's not great, is a much better pitcher than Bennett Sousa. Much better.
Who did he not have available? He had the whole bullpen available to him today.
He put Graveman never got in the game. Yes. I mean, there were options.
And then he did that. Like the we already discussed the walking Trey Turner on two strikes, intentionally walking him to get to Max Muncy. And I love Max Muncy. I enjoyed Max Muncy's home run trout and looked right into the dugout. And he said, walking the dude with two strikes? You bitch. Baby, let's go. I am not a Dodger fan, but I love that reaction. If somebody disrespects you like that, you make them pay. Then in the, I think it was the eighth inning, or no, the ninth inning, Jose Ruiz in the game instead of Kendall Graveman, who got up to throw, instead of Liam Hendricks, who got up to throw. The game is still hanging in the balance. As you see, we lost 11-9. Jose Ruiz promptly gives up a run there. Instead of putting in your better reliever, he's going to put some guy in. And he continues to do this garbage stuff. Put out Jake Berger in the ninth inning when Yoan Moncada comes in the game as a defensive replacement. Now, Moncada got on, but Jake Berger's been the offensive hero as of late. Taking him out when his spot was due up fourth in the lineup at that time, that's a dumb thing. He should be fired. If we had a good general manager, if we had a good owner, he would have been fired weeks ago. Today, we are the laughingstock of Twitter, of everything. Go check it. Go check it. Every Major League Baseball scribe is out here clowning the White Sox. The Dodgers actively clown the White Sox multiple times in their broadcasts. We're the laughing stock again because of our manager. Not because of the hitters. They got 9 hits today. Mm-hmm. Not because Dylan Cease. He gave up no earned runs today. It's the manager. And I don't think the manager matters that much usually because they usually do shit by the book. This man can't be told anything different.
He knows the book. He wrote the book.
Exactly. And so when somebody suggests, hey, Tony, maybe we take this guy out, he's probably like, no, I'm a Hall of Fame manager. I'm a Hall of Fame baseball person. The same shit he said to the officers. Thinking that he can get away with it. And he knows he can get away with it because Jerry's asleep up there. He's not going to fire him. And Rick Hahn can't fire him because he's below him.
Not only is Jerry, I don't know if Jerry's asleep, but the last thing that he wants is the headline, White Sox fire Tony La Russa.
Do it again.
Right? It's the biggest mistake he ever made in 1986 when he let Hawk Harrelson fire him in 1986. And he hires him almost, 36 years later to make up for that mistake? Give me a break. He's been out of baseball for 10 years. You brought up those stats. 2016, the last intentional walk. 2013, the last intentional walk with one ball. That man was retired at that point.
And had been for a while.
Yes.
This man came back to baseball because he was bored, because he didn't know what to do. And what he's been doing for the past 60 games with their 2022 White Sox is throw their chances to win the World Series down the fucking toilet.
Say it, Sean. I mean,
it's brutal. I mean, 4-0. You have a 4-0 lead. This guy talks to you about yesterday. He talks to you about how Tony Gonsolin has a 150 ERA and all this stuff, and he can't even give Vinny Duber an actual real thought, a real thought on how maybe the lineup is affecting these guys on a day-to-day basis. And then you have Tyler Anderson, who's 7-0, a below 250 ERA, and you knock him out after the fourth inning with a 4-0 lead, and your ace dealing on the mound. And you make decision after decision after decision to make your team lose. They were fighting till the end. They were hitting. They seemed disciplined. They were taking their walks. The White Sox offense looked great today. The pitching was all right. But honestly, I think it could have been helped by Dylan Cease being removed before he was. He pitched well. He was hurt by some defense by Jake Berger. And he was hurt by his manager today.
Yeah, and I think the biggest hurt comes from the manager. I mean, during the game, we talked about the Berger play, and it's a missed opportunity for a double play, and it sets up, it kind of helps set up that bad inning in the fifth. But, I mean, really, this does all come down to this is just very, very poor managing. And La Russa might be managing by the book, but it's by a book written 25 years ago, and we're about 5 or 6 versions updated versions past that, and so his book that he's using is way, way outdated.
It was the last book before Windows 95 was
right,
made.
Right.
It was the last handwritten book that was printed on a printing press.
He's got it on one of those big floppy disks that he, sticks in his computer. But I think it's all made worse by the fact that anyone can look at this roster and recognize that your contention window based on the roster is the spot. It's about as wide open as it's going to get. And Herb, to your point, he's actively harming those chances because rarely do you see a team that is this talented on paper, struggling this badly and be able to point it to one person. We can talk about a lot of different things that have gone wrong, but I think a lot of it comes down to that. Because this is a very different season with somebody else at the helm. You try to let the season play out before you make too many judgments. But I think at this point in June, you can look at where they're at, and this game is a microcosm of the season, and it's hard to point the finger any other way.
Right, and the microcosm is the talent is there. You can see the talent on the field. They scored 9 runs, and I understand that hasn't been consistent. But also, we can just look. We had this stat. The White Sox have a worse winning percentage compared to the rest of the league, and it's by 20% when they have scored 5 or more runs. They are a better team when they score 4 or less runs. That makes no sense.
No.
And part of that is managing. You should have a win on your record today. You should have taken 2 of 3 from the Dodgers today. And yet, your inability to coach true fielding today came back and bit you in the ass, and your inability to pull your player bit you in the ass. And this is a guy that talks about urgency, talks about winning all these games. I am sure the reason why he did not pull Dylan Cease out of this game before the sixth inning was to give the bullpen a break or to give the bullpen some stretch. Oh, we wanted to make sure we got to the sixth inning and then we would have the bullpen take it from there. That's not urgency. That's not you realizing that the game can fall out of your grasp. You have a 4-run lead and you can't hold on to those. I don't understand it, Herb.
Yeah, and you guys were talking about him doing it from an old book that's been reprinted and reprinted and reprinted. What I think he was keeping Dylan Cease in there is for some pitcher win. Oh, he gets out of this. He gave up those 2 runs to Freddie Freeman. It's still 4-2. He'll get to the 5th inning, and then I'll take him out. Then he get that pitcher win. Yeah, good. Good for you, Dylan. No, you saw Dylan struggling. You saw it out there. And all those runs, like all Dylan's runs unearned, all of them scored with 2 outs. I believe Bennett Sousa, all 4 runs were earned, and all those scored with 2 outs. So what's going on right there? He needs to be fired. And I saw a comment from Anthony earlier that it looked like Daryl Van Skowen asked him the question that needed to be asked, and Tony was totally combative and dismissive of it. Just ridiculous. Like, you got to face the music when you mess up and not just say, hey, look at my skins on the wall. I'm this, that, and the other. Because no one else is going to hold you accountable. At least the media is holding you accountable in your pressers. And if you give shitty answers, we're going to continue forcing this. And this is not going to end. I wanted somebody to hit a home run and come on here and still ask for Tony's job because the results don't matter. He's actively costing the White Sox games now and making this team a laughingstock. Probably one of the biggest disappointments in baseball this year. They're supposed to be World Series contenders. They're pretenders right now. They're 5.5 games behind the Minnesota Twins. Minnesota Twins.
And
that garbage team is running away because you have a terrible manager and players underperforming, mostly. And I can't dismiss that those players are underperforming because the manager's terrible.
Right. Where's the help? Where's the help for these players? We see Gavin Sheets running into Luis Robert again last night. Another example of players just colliding with one another. We have another situation where Jake Berger can't field the ground ball properly, and Dylan Cease can't get out of that inning. MJ said that Tony said, that's baseball. People are entitled to their opinion. My opinion is that you fucking suck, dude. It's bad. It's bad watching you manage this team. There's no accountability in that answer. There's no accountability. That's not baseball.
No.
The only person that does that's Tony La Russa.
Yeah, why are all these people who are world-renowned, understand baseball, dunking on Tony? Why is Freddie Freeman at second base looking on two strikes? Right. You could see him verbalizing. On two strikes?
Why does Max Muncy take it as a sign of disrespect?
Exactly. Yeah. Because he knows, like, oh, you think I'm some crumb bum? I'm Max Muncy. I told Madison Bumgarner to get that ball from the ocean. I'm still a champion player. I know my average is down, but damn it, watch this. Opposite field, 90-mile-per-hour slider, get the fuck out of here. Yes, talk your stuff, Max. I don't give a damn. Baby, I'm in for you. Because our manager shouldn't be doing dumb stuff to make you feel disrespected and putting in a pitcher who's not ready for the moment. That was just garbage.
And we're not that far removed from managers with impressive resumes, accomplished track records, from losing their jobs.
Yes.
During the season.
Yes.
Joe Maddon.
Joe Girardi,
just within the last week.
Yeah.
You know, and Maddon especially, like, and it's, he's definitely, you know, he made some baffling decisions this season. But there's precedent just in the last week for saying, this isn't working. This isn't right. We've got to make a course correction here. And maybe even more so than the Angels, the White Sox are in a position where if you're going to salvage your season, it does feel like this is a point where something's got to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a shame because you kind of feel like it's not going to happen anyway because, you know, like you said, Sean, Reinsdorf doesn't want that headline out there again because he saw this as an opportunity to hire him back and make up for this thing that was a mistake back in the 80s.
Yeah.
But like most people recognized in 2020, this was a bad choice. This was a mistake. And being proven right, you know, doesn't necessarily feel good in this situation. But Reinsdorf, I mean, I guess the question he's got to ask himself is, what's more important to me? This La Russa relationship or taking one of the best, most talented teams we've assembled here in a long time and actually doing something with it.
Well, and the weird question is, too, it's, I mean, it has to be, what's your relationship, or what's the more important relationship, Jerry Reinsdorf? Is it with the city of Chicago, or is it with Tony La Russa?
Yes.
Both have seemingly been on, you know, lifelong relationship at this point, basically started at the same exact time. I honestly think he'd pick Tony. And it feels like that was the reason he picked Tony after the 2020 season. Tony was supposed to help improve this team. And you heard after 2021 that the Astros were much better than that 2021 White Sox team. And I have no faith in this 2022 team, the way that they started off this season. It's not like they've gotten better. They've taken step backwards after backwards after backwards after backwards. We've been saying this after week one, week two, week three, week four. It's early, it's early, it's early. And the later and later it gets, it's just more and more infuriating. It's the same stuff over and over again from the same people over and over again. It's truly frustrating. People might be a little bit lost because not everybody watches the game. They probably watch us to recap a little bit. So let's go back a little bit through the recap before Vinny joins us.
Do we have to?
We do, unfortunately. Yeah. Dylan Cease was really good to start off this game. Struck out Mookie Betts on three pitches to start off the game. Got out of the first inning after a Freddie Freeman single, but he got Trey Turner to grind out. He got Max Muncy to strike out. He looked really good. The first inning for the White Sox went really well. They worked Tyler Anderson. They didn't score any runs, but Jose Abreu got a walk. They got a couple hits left and right. Mendick led off with a hit, so that was good to see. Then top of the second, 1-2-3 inning for Cease. Then a 1-2-3 inning for the White Sox in the bottom of the second. Top of the third, Gavin Lux got on. Austin Barnes walked, but then Betts flied out. Freeman struck out swinging, and Yasmani Grandal threw out Lux stealing. So an easy inning there in the top of the third. And then the White Sox scored in the bottom of the third. Josh Harrison tripled on one of the weirdest balls we've ever seen just collide out down in the right field line. He tripled. Danny Mendick with a productive out, hit it to the right side of the field. Harrison scored on a ground out to second. And then in the top of the fourth, another 1-2-3 inning for Dylan Cease. He looked fantastic. Again, bottom of the fourth, the White Sox score more runs in this one. Abreu led off with a walk. Berger singled to left field. Then Pollock hit a ground rule double, scoring Abreu, so that made it 2-0. Then Grandal walked. Then, after allowing four base runners, Dave Roberts pulls Tyler Anderson.
A guy with a 7-0 record and a sub-3 ERA before the game.
Novel concept.
Just like, oh, yeah. No, that's
very
enough.
Novel.
That's enough. After four innings, I've seen enough from you, Tyler Anderson. Hit the showers.
Yeah, and here comes Gratterall in, and Gratterall immediately hits Engel, walking in a run, and then Josh Harrison hit a sac fly, so that was good. Another productive out. White Sox end that inning 4-0, and then here comes the top of the fifth, where all the bad stuff happens. Dylan Cease strikes out Justin Turner to start. Then Cody Bellinger hits the weakest single to the opposite field. I mean, like, such a poor single. Dylan Cease just with horrible luck right there. The first runner to start off that bad inning was truly not Cease's fault. Mm-hmm. Then Gavin Lux walked, which, you know, we talked about that a little bit. Cease needs to be more aggressive. Yep. But for the overall, you know, this game, he was more aggressive, which was good to see. Then Austin Barnes grounded into a fielder's choice to third. Lux was safe at second, and that was the error on Berger. So Berger tried to backhand a ball. It popped up from him. He could have turned a double play.
They called it a fielder's choice?
Yeah, they called it a fielder's choice because he got the guy at second, I think, right?
No, he got no one out in the one ball that was hit to him.
And why do they call it a fielder's choice?
I don't know. It should have been an error.
Barnes grounded into fielder's choice to third. Lux safe at second on fielding error by third baseman Berger.
Yeah. It should have not been a fielder's choice. It,
it was an error. If he moved two steps over to his right and instead of backhanding
it would have been a fielder's choice. He catches the ball. He throws a second. Right. You can't assume the double play. You get the error because of him booting the ball. So you should have got one out.
So that would have been the second out of the inning. And then Mookie Betts comes up. Strikeout. So two outs. Then Freddie Freeman doubles, and here's where things get a little bit iffy on us. See, starting off Freeman with a changeup, then he goes back to that. Well, again, it was lower and out of the zone, but then Freeman clears the bases on that double, makes it 4-3. What's the biggest issue in your mind in that third inning? Is it the error that we can't determine whether it's a fielder's choice or an error?
It was an error.
Or is it the Freddie Freeman choice to go back-to-back changeups to Freeman in that one? Which one's the bigger mistake?
I think it's the error. Because you have an opportunity to shut things down and prevent that inning from getting out of hand. And then maybe Dylan Cease can go out and pitch the sixth. Because even, you know, take the total pitch count and throw it out the window, because the only pitch count that matters is the number of pitches he threw in that fifth inning.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can handle throwing 100 pitches, but when 40% of them come in one inning, that's you can't have that. So, yeah, for me, it's the Burger error, because if he makes that play, totally changes the trajectory of the inning, possibly of the game. And for me, it all hinges right there.
Same thing with me. Yeah, the error is a huge thing. Like you said, it was a kind of a lazy, like, you got to play the ball. He's young in his MLB career, a rookie designated this year. So he has to play the ball and definitely not backhand that play where he handcuffed himself and dropped the ball right there. He makes that play, even if it's just the fielder's choice. Dylan's like, okay, I got some momentum. I got some confidence. Dylan has to pitch over those errors, but it's really tough to do when you have professional hitters like Freddie Freeman coming up next. Yes, the two consecutive changeups to Freddie Freeman, really bad decision, the second one, because the changeup for him is a surprise pitch. If you throw that after throwing a fastball slider, cool. People understand, okay, I can not hit that because I was looking dead red. But when you throw two, he gets his eyes ready. He gets his eyes ready for the same zone. He pretty much pitches in the same spot. And Freddie Freeman, that's in his swing plane. He just flipped that ball over the first baseman's head and went all the way to the right field. So, yes, that was a bad pitch, but I think the error was much worse.
Well, and the thing, too, with Cease, like you talked about it, you can even notice discerning as a non-MLB hitter when he's throwing that changeup, because the arm velocity does slow down. He doesn't really have a new grip on it. He's just kind of throwing it slower, and you could see that he is physically trying to slow down his arm. Mm-hmm. And it's a decent pitch when guys aren't expecting it, but when you're throwing it back-to-back times, guys are going to be on it. And Freddie Freeman didn't murder the ball, nope. Right? It wasn't even a hard hit ball.
74 miles per hour, I believe.
Mm-hmm. 74, but he got the barrel on it, and that's all that mattered. It wasn't a misdirected hit. He pulled it into right field, right down the line, and that's all that he needed to do was put good wood on it, and that's what he did. So it just frustrating there. Maybe could have been a better pitch selection from Grandal and Cease on that one. But still, I mean, just like you guys said, Berger makes that play, Betts strikes out. There's no decision to be made. And yet, even though after Freeman doubled down the line, Trey Turner reached down an infield single to third. Jake Burger could have charged it. He stayed back a little bit. I think he stepped back, waited for the bounce, then came in on it. Possibly made it, could have had a play at second. Could have had a play at Freeman running to third. Could have had a shot at Turner, but you know, Turner beats out the throw, and Barnes scores, makes it 4-3, and then Muncy doubled to deep center, making it 4-4.
And I noticed that in that situation, you understand there's runners at first, or was it second and third at that time when Trey Turner's up. It's two outs. That Trey Turner is fast as hell. You saw it earlier in the game where Danny Mendick did a bang-bang throw and got him out at first base. With Jake Burger there, has to have the defensive awareness, okay, how many outs are there? Two, cool. Who's batting? Trey Turner, cool. That man runs really fast. The ball's hit to me slowly. I either got to charge it, and if I can't charge it, I got to see what that third baseman's doing. I got to see what that guy at third's doing. If he's going to score easily, cool. There's a guy at second running right at me. But unluckily for the White Sox, whoever was playing second baseman, Josh Harrison, was just in la-la land. Wasn't covering second there. It's not a force out, but still, you know that Trey Turner's going down the bag. You know he's got ultimate speed. You need to find another way to get that out, and they just failed there. I mean, even if the run scores there and Trey Turner makes it, you got to get that third out so your pitcher can get out it with confidence, and 4-3, you still got the lead. Tony gets his pitcher win for Dylan Cease.
That one play is not as frustrating as the error by Burger, but still, just another way where they could have gotten out of that inning. Dodgers end up taking the lead in that inning and taking the lead 6-4. We'll go back to that, but Vinny Duber is going to join us from Guaranteed Rate Field. The best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000. But that's not it. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from CHGO Locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from CHGO Locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. If you have questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. PointsBet's your home for live in-play betting, and it just got even better. Introducing PointsBet's newest feature, the live NBA same-game parlay. For the first time ever, you can build the perfect live NBA same-game parlay only with PointsBet. You can combine your favorite bets anytime during the game, and if you want more, you can boost your live same-game parlays. You can watch live, parlay live, and boost live with PointsBet. And now online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life at PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And I want to talk to you about our good friends at Owen. I have been pronouncing their name wrong, and that is on me. It says in big yellow letter, pronounced like Owen, O-W-Y-N, is a fantastic 100% plant-based protein shake that gives you nutrition that works just as hard as you. I saw Kevin Kaduk, our content creator, or head of content here at CHGO, chugging one of these right after the CHGO Sports Podcast. All of their products are free of artificial ingredients. They're allergen-friendly. They have no gluten or dairy in them, and they're easily digestible. I had one when they came in. They sent us samples. I had a strawberry banana one, a chocolate one, a vanilla one, the salted caramel one. All of them very, very fantastic, and that is why Chicago Bears quarterback Justin Fields, who follows a plant-based diet, loves Owen, and that's why he's smashing bombs out into Waveland. Ashland? Yeah. One of them. He's hitting home runs today out in Wrigley Field because he's got that plant power. So you can join Owen and CHGO. We've partnered up to give you an awesome offer. You can get 20% off your first purchase at liveowen.com. That is LiveOwyn.com, and with code CHGO20, you can get 20% off your first purchase. Join me and Justin Fields and try Owen, only what you need. Hi, Vinny.
Ashland, really? Come on, Ashland. That's a poor guess of one of the streets that's around Wrigley Field.
Clark, Addison, Waveland, Addison. Sheffield.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. I've lived here long enough. All right, Vinny, I just have so many things on my mind. So many things happened in this four-hour baseball game, but the pressing thing on my mind is, what's your favorite 80s movie?
Yeah, that draft was crap, Jared. That nobody's taken any Indiana Jones. No one's taken any Star Wars. What are you guys even doing over there?
A lot. I think we overthought it. But at least I didn't call for an intentional walk with two strikes.
I guess that's what we're talking about. We got Vinny Duber joining us from Guaranteed Rate Field. You can follow him on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He is the CHGO White Sox beat writer. And we got Jake saying, I don't think I've ever been excited for a Vinny segment or this excited for a Vinny segment before. So a lot happened in this game. I'm assuming you talked to Tony La Russa. How'd it go?
You're not going to be excited much longer, I have a feeling.
Oh, that's shocking.
Yeah, no, Tony La Russa was surprised that it was even a question that he had that intentional walk ahead of the home run. He was shocked that there were questions about it. He called it an easy decision for him, especially after the wild pitch that freed up first base. He cited Trey Turner, who has been fantastic, obviously, against just about everybody so far this season, one of the better hitters in baseball to this point, and said that he would rather have faced Muncy than Trey Turner, given Turner's success this year. He did cite a few splits, not super specifically, but mentioned, you know, against the left-handed pitcher there. And obviously everybody's been tweeting about Max Muncy's career splits all damn day. I think, you know, to try and guess what Tony was talking about, I'm guessing he meant this year, which Max Muncy's numbers have been very poor this season. Right. But yes, that is correct, Herb. But I would just, you know, again, this season, Trey Turner has been excellent. Max Muncy's numbers have been not good for whatever reason you know. That was the reasoning there. And like I said, he was surprised that it was even a question because he thought it was a very easy decision.
I don't know if anybody asked this question, but who does he get this information from? Is this from Miguel Cairo? Is this from Shelly Duncan? Is there an analytics department that's helping him out? Or is this just observational analytics, as he said at beginning of his press conference when he got hired? Because there's people in my timeline who are not baseball people that understand that Max Muncy is a deadly hitter versus right or left. It doesn't matter. And having two strikes against Trey Turner, yes, he's still a good hitter, but damn it, it's so frustrating to have this guy do this when a team is in their championship window. I just need him to ask for help from somebody he thinks is smarter than him, because it's so frustrating. I don't know if anybody is helping him, though.
Well, I would imagine that these reports are organizationally created, whether that's, and I think that that means with help from everywhere. And you've got a guy in Shelly Duncan who you mentioned there, who that's part of his job description and job title with this team on the coaching staff. But certainly, you know, you see all the time everybody using these scouting reports and the sheets of paper and, you know, are floating around everywhere. So this is not something that is, you know, being discouraged. This is, they've got all this information in front of them. They know what they're looking at. They know what they're looking for. And I think you had the case of a hot hitter, that they didn't want to beat him. And they were going to try to have somebody else beat them, not the guy, who has been hitting everything. Again, this is not my opinion. This is me, sharing what Tony explained. What I do agree with him on is a point he brought up, which is this is a result. Part of this questioning is based on the result, right? And if Max Muncy pops up to the second baseman, if Max Muncy strikes out, certainly folks are still going to be questioning what just happened, but it is not going to be the flashpoint that it is currently. I agree with that. I think that something that he says often, which is, I think, generally very correct when it comes to baseball decisions by managers, is, you know, if it works, it's a good decision. If it doesn't, it's a bad decision. And I think that most of the time, that's probably true. I can see why people are upset about this. I would also bring up the point that it seems people are upset with Tony for just about everything these days, whether that is warranted or not. I think no matter what he would have done in a situation where it costs you the game, that would have been very upsetting to everybody, and folks would have been quick to jump on that. As plenty of the tweets from two of the three people I'm talking to right now would indicate. So,
yeah, I would just think that it's just inconsistent. Like, you don't walk Byron Buxton with first base open and you allow him to hit a home run, and then you're scared of Trey Turner with two strikes, and then you let Max Muncy
do outs.
It. Yeah, it's just like, this is not you, Vinny, and I'm not railing on you. I just, his inconsistent answers are just irritating me. I want the man to be fired, not because of any type of reason. I don't hate the man personally, but he's definitely lost it, and he's not ready for this game that's currently being played in Major League Baseball. If you look at the Twitter sphere, and I know Twitter sphere is not real life, everybody's dunking on him, and the White Sox are a laughingstock now, what, three games behind 500 as a team? It's just, ugh, just so frustrating, Vinny. I know that you guys going in there are frustrated, and some people said that he was kind of combative in his answers. Did you have that feeling too?
I mean, yeah, he was, but I didn't see it as anything that was dramatically different from what I've seen over the last 2 years from him being second-guessed after a loss. As we well know, Tony's mood very much depends on the outcome of the game. And when you have a tough game in which it was frustrating for everybody that was involved with it, whether you were playing in it, managing it, or watching it, that frustration for him gets ratcheted up. And I think, I don't think it was anything that he was lashing out at anybody. I think it was he was mad because they lost. And, you know, for example, I asked him, why'd you stick with Dylan Cease, who threw 40-something pitches in the fifth inning, you know, and couldn't get out of that inning? And he very curtly told me that he struck out Mookie Betts, which is true. He did strike out Mookie Betts, and, you know, Dylan Cease was not the reason, as you can tell from the box score and the zero earned runs that he gave up, why the White Sox gave up six runs in the fifth inning. But he was not getting out of it. He was not getting out of that inning. And he really only gave up one big hit in that inning to Dylan. So, you know, call it the right decision or the wrong decision if you want. Again, he thought it was a very easy one. He didn't think that it was a difficult one to stick with Dylan when he said he saw him strike out Mookie Betts, and he didn't think that there was anybody in the bullpen that was going to be able to, you know, do that good. You know, who would you prefer over the guy who just struck out Mookie Betts? That was the reasoning from Tony. So, but yeah, obviously that inning went on for a long time. So no, I don't think that this was Tony being any different than he normally is. But obviously the glare is intensifying as this team continues to disappoint. I would point out that they they had a lot of things go wrong that weren't anywhere close to being Tony's fault. You know, the defense was no good today, I didn't think. You had some missed opportunities to drive in some more runs. Yeah. You know, in the eighth, they only got maybe as close as they did at the end of the game there, because you score two runs in the eighth inning on a ridiculous play by the opposing pitcher, and then you still got two guys in scoring position with nobody out, and they just stay right there. So, you know, it's a confluence of events that lead to an outcome like this, and lead to every outcome in every nine-inning baseball game, because they're long and it takes a lot to swing the tide in any one direction. But, yeah, it was a game in which, listen, I see every single day everybody's mad at Tony. Everybody hates his every lineup that comes out. Everybody hates everything that he's doing out there. Everything they do that is wrong is his fault. And 90% of the time, that's not true. And then, you know, there's a game like today in which some questionable decisions were made, and the people who jump on him all the time finally have reason to. And it's hard to escape. It's hard to escape.
Yeah, I understand this is probably the easiest point when people are upset with Tony, but you talk about the confluence of events, and you know, the defense being bad isn't Tony's fault, but I was told that in 2021 and 2022 that Tony would be able to bring great fundamentals to this team, and I'm just not seeing it from them. Does Tony have any answer to the misplay by Jake Berger out there, Yasmani Grandal with another pass ball? Any thoughts on the defense from Tony today and where the improvement could be made, because it feels like it's not being made over the past year and a half?
I mean, he was specifically asked about the Berger plays. It wasn't something that, you know, vaulted him into a discussion of the defense in general. You know, talked about some tough plays, but a play here or there that needs to be made kind of thing. I mean, Jake Berger, I don't think has ever been hyped because of his defensive ability. He is a guy who swings a big bat. There maybe is a reason that you're seeing that he is not being played at second base. You know, Tony doesn't want to play him at second base. Now you see him go out there today and make, what, I think three misplays, you know, one of which went for that error in the fifth inning that kind of led to all the damage. But, yeah, I mean, listen, I think everybody's looking for an answer right now. What's wrong? Why is this team not doing what it's supposed to be doing? Who is to blame for this team not doing what it is supposed to be doing? I don't know if there is one person to blame. I don't know if there's anybody to blame besides, you know, the guys who are not getting the job done. I think that it's very difficult to suggest, especially when you are watching through a television screen or watching from the stands, anything about what's going on behind the scenes, you know, that this is a problem because so-and-so isn't doing this, I think. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a hard thing to figure out. And I understand too that there have been situations in the very recent past, and by which I mean the last week, in which struggling teams, disappointing teams have fired their managers, and you know, the buck stopped there, right? The buck stopped with the skipper in terms of what was going on wrong with those two teams. We've seen one of those teams respond in a very positive way in Philadelphia. We've seen one of those teams not be able to pick itself up the mat, what's going out in Orange County. So I don't know. It's very hard to figure out. I don't think, let's put it this way. When I hear people suggest that there needs to be a change like that, I say, okay, what happens once the change is made? Does Tony La Russa losing his job make Yasmani Grandal a better hitter? Does Tony La Russa losing his job suddenly put Yoan Moncada in a time machine and take him back to 2019? You know, this lineup right now is not scoring. That's why the White Sox are the way they are right now. And they score today, of course, and they lose. But generally, they're not scoring. And there is so many holes in this lineup right now that it's very difficult to paper over it. And it's very difficult to say, all right, just take this away and they'll do it. They'll do it. No, the whole lineup is failing right now. And I don't know who you put that on in terms of real blame. Maybe that there is that overarching thing that you can scapegoat basically that you can pick, and everybody looks around and goes, oh boy, what's all this now? But I don't know if that's something that actually gets the job done the way people want it to get done.
I understand your point, but also when the team does score runs, when they score five or more runs, they're 8-7, which is well below the league average when you're scoring five runs. So it's just frustrating that when they do score runs like today, there are mistakes like the manager, in my opinion, that blow the game for them. And understandably, you know, the fact that Yasmani Grandal looks extremely weak up there and afraid to make contact with the ball in the ninth inning, that Yoan Moncada is basically doing the same thing. Like, yeah, that definitely plays into a part of the loss, but I don't know. It just feels like the guy calling the shots might have some sort of influence over this as well. I'm not sure. It's very baffling.
Yeah, and this is more of a comment, not necessarily for you, Vinny. I don't necessarily need you to answer it, but where I get lost on Tony is you guys. You guys are journalists. You guys are asking him respectful, diplomatic questions about the game that just happened.
Yeah.
And he's breaking bad on you guys. I don't know if you guys feel that, but I listened to what your question and his answer to it. Disrespectful, I thought. Same thing today. I'm looking at the comments. Hey, Merck works for the WhiteSox.com. Disrespectful, kind of dismissing. Merck, that's not how you do it. You have to face the media. They're giving you a chance to explain your answers. Don't be disrespectful. These guys and women are trying to do their jobs as professionals, and I'm just sick of that, as if he's, like, better, as if he asked you guys, so would you guys do anything different? Like, no. Please, like, you guys are not going to answer that. You're journalists. Like, no, we're asking you because you're the goddamn manager of this White Sox team. So please be respectful when we ask you questions. I know you're not saying that. I'm saying that because he's been very, very terse, and it shouldn't be that way because you guys are just trying to get the job done. Moving on, he put in Bennett Sousa in a one-run game in the sixth inning. Did anybody ask him about Bennett Sousa or Jose Ruiz, where you could have gone to Aaron Bummer or Kendall Graveman in those situations to get and keep those games where they are? Because Bennett Sousa immediately came in and gave up four runs. It was just so frustrating that the move was wrong there and then the execution was bad.
I have noticed this. I don't really have any numbers in front of me to back this up, but I have noticed Tony does not really like to go to his late inning guys when they're losing. Yes. And whether that margin is as small as one run or as big as six, it really seems like, you know, which team is in front determines which pitchers he uses. And that might be a usage thing. It might be a thing where it's like, well, listen, there's a situation in which we're going to be ahead by three runs in the late innings over the next three or four games. I need to have these guys at my disposal in order to use them in that fashion. Or maybe it's, you know, I know that it is a favorite point of a lot of, you know, more numbers inclined thinkers, you know, or people just out there on Twitter or wherever to
nerds
suggest that. I don't even mean that.
I'm
trying to be nice and dance around any sort of, you know, ageism problems. But my point is just saying that there are a lot of people who think that, like, your closer should pitch any time outside, you know, not just in the ninth inning. And then there are people who say the ninth inning, those are the three hardest outs to get. Of course, I want my closer pitching then and only then. Tony, by his habits, it seems, would lean toward the latter. And I think that I can speculate, I haven't asked him this question, but I can speculate based on watching the games that when it comes to them being behind, he's not going to trot out the guys that he uses when they're ahead. Whether that is right or wrong, I will leave up to you to decide.
Yeah, the when hearing that, that brings up the word frustrating, and I think you mentioned the word frustrating just after this loss. Could you be able to describe maybe the locker room after this loss? I mean, were you able to talk to some players? What were their reactions? Because, again, 11-9 against the Dodgers, I mean, this is the result that you wanted, having nine runs. I would assume that the players have to be frustrated by this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's quiet in there like it is after any loss. And today especially, it was pretty vacant. You know, I think you had a lot of guys getting ready. They have a charity event later tonight, so I think you got guys getting ready to go over to that. We talked to Dylan Cease, and you know, he basically said, you know, this is the kind of team that you want to be able to hang with. And he believed that they showed that they could hang with a team like the Dodgers. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but they, you know, they did. No, I mean, they did. They shut them out on Tuesday. They lost by only three runs yesterday, and today they only lost by two. If you want to take that as a moral victory, that's fine. That's not going to win you a playoff series, but I guess it's better that a team as really fantastic as the LA Dodgers can come to town, and it's not just a bunch of blowouts like we saw when the Yankees came to town. So you can take that as a silver lining if you want, but at the end of the day, it's two losses and only one win.
All right, Vinny, I'll get you out on this. What did Dylan say about his performance? I was really impressed by it, but he's probably got to be frustrated not getting to that fifth inning or completing five full innings. You know, we've seen Michael Kopech be frustrated about, you know, the length of where he was going earlier on in the season. How did Cease recap this one?
Yeah, absolutely. He was not happy with the fifth inning. You know, who would be giving up a bunch of base runners like that? But you know, and yeah, he said he would have liked to complete the fifth inning. I'm sure he started the day hoping that he could complete nine innings. You know, that's the way these guys think. But, you know, this one was not on Dylan Cease. I don't know if it was, you know, a fantastic outing, but he didn't give up any earned runs. You know, that's two in a row now where it's been a lot of guys on base and, you know, runs on the scoreboard and none of them are earned, which I thought was just kind of interesting. But you know, seven walks in Tampa, no earned runs, six runs scored in one inning today while he was on the, or while guys that he put on base or reached base while he was pitching, I should say, no earned runs. So the ERA is going down, guys.
That is good to hear. If that's going to do it, Jared, any questions? Herb, any questions? We all good?
No, I was just saying Dylan Cease, and like I mentioned to you guys, that after this game, I'm sure Max Muncy, Trey Turner, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, like, damn, no, I don't want to face that again. That was great because that stuff is electric. I don't want to face that Michael Kopech again. They're leaving there thinking, okay, that team is messed up, and I'm mad that they walked my guy with two strikes, but the pitching staff plays. And even though Dylan Cease gave up, what, five runs and none of them are earned, they're like, okay, they can pitch. I don't want to see those guys in a short or a World Series where they're going to be pitching multiple times. So that's what I got to say about that. It's nothing really for Vinny to say there, but yeah, that's all I wanted to say about that.
We appreciate you, Vinny. We want to say that too.
Love
Thanks,
you, Vinny.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Vinny.
You can follow Vinny on Twitter at Vinny Duber. He's the CHGO White Sox beat reporter out at Guaranteed Rate Field, and it's always very fun having him join us, even if Tony La Russa's answers are not fun. And that is our opinion, not Vinny's opinion. Vinny just shows up and goes to work every single day.
Professional.
He is a professional, and that's what we love about Vinny. We also love the professional points bet. If you enjoy CHGO, one way to help us continue to grow is to download the points bet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you get two risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO Locker. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. And in case you missed it, online signup is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. You'll be signing up with the fastest sportsbook easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. I am a big fan of PointsBet. I'm wearing the PointsBet hat. I'm not a fan of my bets on PointsBet. I would not really give you any advice right now because my bank is dry, but I do just want to urge you to, if you know, sign up with PointsBet. If you're looking for a sports book, if you're looking for some fun ways to watch the White Sox game, maybe betting on them could enjoy your experience, because if they lose this game and you bet on them to lose, you still win money.
You hedge your emotions there.
Right.
You got money in your pocket even though your favorite baseball team loses. That's how I like to do it.
And you're firing off TLR hate tweets in the background?
I mean, there was a White Sox talk press conference going on this. And so I saw it, and I know what his answer is. So I was like, this is just disrespectful, and I mean it. These professionals are out there, and Jerry, you've been out there. You've been out to ask questions to Tony La Russa specifically, and him giving you an answer as if he's better than you, that he knows better than you, just because he's a Hall of Fame baseball person, that's disrespectful. We're both working here. This is my arena just as much as it is yours. You giving me that crap answer does not endear myself to you. You giving me that answer shows that you think that you are better than me. and I am not going to take it. I went to, you know, these guys, these men and women went to journalism school, have been in the battles their whole life. And for this old man to be, I'm sorry, ageism, I'm sorry, for this dick to do, to disrespect these professionals out here doing their job is just, that should be fire. You should be fireable. Like, Rick Hahn should look people at your team getting represented by this man tonight on all the baseball shows. It'll be that man. And everybody clowning on him. Everybody laughing at him. It's so frustrating. And I know Rick Hahn doesn't have any say-so, but he should do something. Kenny Williams should do something. Their team is losing, and they're losing. I don't think firing Tony Ruzza is the answer to them winning, but it doesn't and might help. Can't hurt, might help.
Well, I think two things that stand out to me just in hearing, you know, what Vinny had to share. Number one, I don't like that he was surprised that he was being asked about that, because he should know that that's an unusual decision to make, to intentionally walk somebody with two strikes.
You pointed out the statistics, right?
He has to know.
Did he miss Max Muncy calling him a bitch as he crossed home plate? Because that would have been a good sign that something happened.
To tip him off that this was an unexpected thing for him to do. So, number one, I don't like that he seemed surprised. And number two, Herb, like you're saying, I think sometimes managers, you know, because he's not the only one I've interacted with, I think sometimes they need a reminder that if I, as the journalist, am in there asking you a question about a decision, it's not that I think I'm smarter than you are. It's not anything like that. Sometimes it's, I need you to give this some context. I need so that I can understand it better. Because it might be that, hey, that was the right decision, but it just didn't work out. I don't think that really applies in this case.
Correct.
But a lot of times it could be like, okay, now I understand what your thought process was so that I can convey that to readers. But I have seen before, and again, he's not the only one, but I have seen before where it will sometimes come across to them as if, I'm asking the question because I think I know better.
Right, because you have that opinion. You hold that opinion. And the fact that, you know, he's not able to give that thought, he's not able to articulate, this is why I intentionally walked that player, is exactly why Herb still has these questions. Right. When Byron Buxton's up and first base is open, why are you not intentionally walking one of the best players in the American League to, you know, avoid Luis Arraez of all players? But then when Trey Turner's up, you're going to Max Muncy. Like, it just makes no sense. So we're just trying to make sense of it all, and the fact that it doesn't make sense, the fact that he is so stern and I guess, you know, as curt as he is, as Vinny describes it, it just makes it so frustrating for fans, because this team should not be below 500 right now. There should be reasons why this team is below 500, and I don't know what it is. Yes, the players aren't hitting, but again, when they do hit, 8-7 is below MLB average. There is something wrong with this team. There's something wrong with their defense. There's something wrong with their late game management. There's something wrong with their ability to perform and close out games. I don't know where that comes from. I don't know if firing the manager will be it, but it's just frustrating to hear, and no answers just continues to be frustrating. I do want to ask you, what's the strategy behind asking Tony a question? Do you have one? Is there something that you try to phrase it in the right way to get the best answer? I mean, how do you go about asking Tony questions? Because is this the first time you've been working with Tony? I know he obviously had like the 10-year layoff. So how long have you been kind of around Tony?
Before,
and then what's it
before
like?
Before his time here, I've not worked with him. So, and last year was different because it was all Zoom-based. So, you know, that's just a very different kind of interaction. But yeah, when asking a question like that, it is what you try to convey to them is, like I described, I'm just seeking to understand. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, not only how you word the question, but I think too, I always try to put on like a sort of positive affect when I'm asking a question like that. And, you know, silly things like affirming nods and those kinds of things, because again, this isn't about me trying to be confrontational. I'm trying to understand. And it could be, I could be asking you a question where I think you really goofed it up, but I'm still going to try to phrase that question so that I can get the most out of you, because ultimately I see it as my job to convey that to the reader so that they can read and come away with an understanding as well. And it's challenging because, you know, some of his answers, either he can be curt at times, or sometimes his answers are, they can be long and sort of rambling sometimes, and he'll interject with stories from 30 years ago, and you're trying to parse through all of that to understand. So, yeah, it's...
Well, and just listening to him, it's tough to find the messaging. It's right. tough to find what is our true message of this baseball team. What is the direction? What is the leadership of this baseball team? I'm surprised. I'm shocked by it every single time. This is a Hall of Fame baseball person, and I am unsure of how he communicates to his team. I think he's a very, very poor communicator, yep. at least from what I've seen. And I think that it is hurting this team. And I don't know if that's going to change. They won 93 games last year, but I don't think they're winning 93 games this year. And I know people were drawing conclusions to that 1983 winning mm-hmm. ugly team. This team was not supposed to win ugly. They were supposed to win cleanly. They were supposed to win by blowouts. They were supposed to dominate the AL Central. They're still below 500. There are problems with this team, and I think it goes well past the players. I think it goes well past that manager who can't articulate his thoughts. It goes well past that powerless GM. It goes mm-hmm. all the way up to that owner. This organization stinks. Thank you. That's my thesis. That's my paper. That's the CHGO White Sox postgame show. Any other final thoughts on this game?
No,
did we miss anything?
You summed it up.
Exclamation right. point.
There we yeah. go. We'll see the White Sox take on the Rangers this weekend. Herb's going to be in Detroit.
Oh, yeah. I'm going before just to scout out Detroit.
There you go.
Before the White Sox go there on Monday. But yeah, Courtney, my fiance, has not been to Detroit or Comerica Park. She's been to Detroit. Who hasn't? It's terrible. We're going for a day, and then we're coming right back. We're staying at a casino, so that might be the best part of the thing.
Nice. There you go.
Yeah, so we're going to enjoy ourselves in the toilet. I actually like that stadium. It's nice, comfortable, and the Tigers fans are real nice. Well, sweethearts.
Enjoy
yeah.
and best of luck. Jared, what you got planned this weekend?
I will be at the ballpark tomorrow night there and on Saturday.
All right, so watch out for Jared's work on social media. You can follow him at JWillis, Y's instead of I's on Twitter, and become a member at allchgo.com. You get a free shirt when you sign up. You get access to our AllCHGO Discord, and you get access to Vinny and Jared's great writing. So if you want to get a recap on what happened today, Vinny's got you covered. And if you're looking for stories from Friday and Saturday, Jared will have you covered on allchgo.com. I want to thank Jared for joining us today. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at JWillis, Y's instead of I's on Twitter. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. A shout out to Dylan Cease. He was fantastic. 41% whiff percentage today, 35% called strikes plus whiff. I understand he didn't go the full five innings, but that's a tough team, and he looked fantastic. And no earned runs is a huge feat there. And it's not his fault. His manager left him out to dry today. You can follow the show on Twitter at CHGO_White Sox. And shout out to Natalie and Billy for being the best producing duo out there. Thank you all for watching and participating in the chat, and we will talk to you on Sunday for the finale of the Rangers and White Sox series. For Herb Lawrence, Jared Willis, Vinny Duber, and everyone at CHGO, we will talk to you on Sunday, and go White Sox.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.